If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TeladoC Health/whatsyourwhy.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, I am live from a hotel room in Miami, Florida, hours from attending Game 2 between the Heat and the Celtics. Interesting and strange Game 1 in that series, but I'm very much looking forward to hearing what you saw and thought during what I hope to be a civil, lighthearted conversation
about the series between two old chums. Let's stop beating around the bush, okay? It's been a long time since I've been on the podcast, and I know some people who listen to the pod like to think that you and I are buds in real life, that you and I are friends who chat. It's not true. Michael has it in his contract that I'm not allowed to reach out to him unless it's podcast related. So I've had to wait patiently since doing this podcast, not this previous Monday, but the Monday before. We haven't had a chance to talk about so many things that have happened. But most importantly, Michael getting a front row seat to Heat culture, not only watching the Miami Heat, but knowing you had to watch Jason Tatum, top five Tatum, turn the ball over, was it 6 times in one quarter? See Max Strus absolutely pack him up again? See Jimmy Butler, who I think I was told on this podcast that Jimmy Butler wasn't as good as Trae Young. I think that was something I was told on this podcast. How about 41 points for the best defensive team in the NBA? Whew! Oh, people have been texting me. Are you going to light Mike up on the pod? And I was like, I don't know.
That's just a lie. Stop. No one's texting you anything.
Dan Bloom.
Please stop.
Dan Bloom, today, our podcast producer today, Dan Bloom, licking my chops for this pod. Don't hold back. Heater holding the door. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just going to let it flow. Whatever happens. I was sent some very mean text messages about Bam Adebayo. I don't know how many Celtics shots he has to block before you'll respect him.
If we're going to do the trash talk thing, we've got to keep it honest. Like, that just has never happened at all. Okay, Rohan, I'm glad that you're fired up. You're into it. By the time most of our listeners hear this, hopefully a lot of you are hearing this before the game, but if you're hearing it after and the Celtics have won by 35 points, just know that I am sitting and twiddling my thumbs, content. Rohan, on today's show, we'll break down the Eastern Conference Finals, of course. We'll take a look at the lottery, which has happened. that's a thing.
Why do they put it in the – I guess they want half the teams that aren't in the playoffs to have something to look forward to. But I know we're about to talk about it, but let me just give you a heads up right now. I could not care less about the lottery, and it's stupid that they do it.
Beautiful. Okay, yeah. Well, listeners, keep listening in.
Yeah. That doesn't mean I don't have takes, but...
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
We'll also open up the mailbag. We got some great questions on today's show. We'll touch on the Western Conference Finals and a little bit more stuff happening. But first, a quick reminder to please keep your emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, Rohan, let's, as you say, not beat around the bush. Let's start with, there's actually some news related to today's game that I want to touch on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of injury, COVID, personal reasons related absences, and it's not unfortunate in the case of the personal reasons. Derek White, his wife is having his first child, so that's wonderful news. Congratulations to him. But he will not play in game two. I guess, let's just start with the absences. And Kyle Lowry is dealing with a hamstring. Obviously, he's a significant player who impacts the Miami Heat's rotation. Al Horford missed game one, and as we are recording this, he's been upgraded to questionable. But I my mind is like a rat race when I don't
understand that scenario whatsoever.
I've had so many conversations with so many people about it, and everyone is just flummoxed. It makes no sense.
Did you read the quote where he allegedly said he was vaccinated?
To the Boston Globe you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yes, I am aware of that, yes.
Because it's also not a very illuminating quote that he gave.
Yeah, we could, I don't want to get too much into this. Yeah. I'm so, tired about COVID stuff.
It is. It's just it just adds to the confusion of the situation, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart missed game one also with a sprained foot. He is probable. He's going to play in game two. Mm-hmm. I guess, my first question is just, how much do you take away from game one when one side is missing Lowry, a starter, the other side is missing two starters, Horford and Smart, and we can get into the X's and O's, but, Peyton Pritchard down is having to close the end of a game and all that. So just what do you make of what I can learn and glean from a game where key players were not participating?
For sure. And it's funny because we had this conversation after that Bucks-Celtics series. The easiest game to overreact to is game one. And especially in this case, you mentioned it. They went after Pritchard relentlessly. That's not going to be an option for them when Marcus Smart is on the floor. I mean, Jimmy Butler can try to win that matchup. He's going to win it sometimes. He's going to lose it sometimes. And that's going to significantly change the tenor of this series, particularly in the half court. So it just is a bummer because I would like to see what the coaches in this series could do at full strength from a tactical standpoint, because it's a matchup of two fantastic defenses, two teams that have the ability to close with five guys who are really good defensively. And I would like to see the coaches try to overcome that challenge. I'd like to see the individual players try to overcome that challenge. And as far as game one goes, Heat fans are getting mad at me because I tweeted, I thought the Celtics had an incredible first half. That was super. They were carving the Heat's defense up. And that was without two starters. And they found out about Horford hours before the game. It's one thing to you have a day in practice to prepare, institute a game plan. You find out right before he's not going to play. The Heat, yes, are missing Lowry. And I think this is the exact series they need him for, as well as Gabe Vincent has played. And he had good moments in game one. This is the series they need Lowry for. That one game they beat Boston during the year, Lowry was their most important player in the fourth quarter. I did think the Celtics were in a more compromised position, already kind of coming in, I think, a tighter rotation than the Heat generally, to lose two starters. I mean, they dusted off Aaron Nesmith, who had good moments, but obviously not a guy they want to go to often during the postseason. So I don't take away much from it, to be honest, other than Miami had to win that game. And the fact that they were losing at halftime was concerning to me, frankly. They had to win that game, a game one at home. Like, you could argue game one at home, you kind of have to win anyway, even if the other team's at full strength. But, like, to me, that was the kind of game Miami couldn't afford to drop.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. The first half was very strange to me. Like, I was getting vibes of the first round series against the Nets, where they were just like, the Celtics offensively were just kind of doing what they wanted, living in the paint. They would drive by the initial layer of the defense. There would be like no help rotation.
Yeah.
Just like, I was like, this is not the Miami Heat.
Yeah, it was shocking. I was like, there was absolutely no resistance to, like, Tatum was getting 2 feet in the paint whenever he wanted. As you mentioned, help defense was non-existent. Yeah, it was bad. It was straight up bad.
I mean, I don't have the numbers. I probably should have looked this up.
They were 16 of 20 at the rim in the first half.
Right. They had something ridiculous in the paint that was like 42, I want to say, in the first half, and then like six in the second half. You saw Tatum pick and rolls with Rob Williams that resulted in lobs. I know Rob Williams like didn't play in the second round, really. So, you know, didn't see those lobs for that reason, but also didn't see that action really in that series because, like, it's just a completely different defense. And so to see that happen was like eye opening, and I was kind of surprised.
Was so good in game one. I think he was a plus five, but he was only able to play 28 minutes. He looked a little tired. He had picked up a couple fouls. Like, man, like, he looked like when the game started and he like had a full tank of gas, I thought he looked like the most athletic player on the floor by far. Some of his closeouts were unbelievable. He was really good in that game.
He was. I mean, yeah, the athleticism is the athleticism. He had some putbacks. He cramped up in the fourth quarter, and then Celtics had to go. They were playing Daniel Tice and Peyton Pritchard in the fourth quarter of, like, a conference finals game, and it was okay, cool. But defensively, you know, he had moments. There were some – Gabe Vincent had some great momentum-changing plays where, you know, he's the low man helping on the lob to Rob, and Rob – kept bringing the ball down. I think he did it twice. Gabe stripped him, go the other way, and there's a bucket. I'm fascinated to see, Marcus Smart is playing tonight, so you would imagine that he will be closing the game. That doesn't mean Pritchard won't close because Derek White is not out there, but it gives them a little bit more. It makes it harder, I think, to game the matchups when.
Do you really think? So it is funny because I do think Pritchard is going to have to play with White out, but I can't imagine. You think they'll close small like that and have Pritchard on the floor? What do you think? If you had to guess their closing lineup for game two.
Well, if Horford plays, it's a completely different ball game, I think. Like, because you can close with Rob, Horford. You could close Grant, Rob.
Yeah, actually. Tatum, like, Brown, Smart.
You could. There's a lot of different things you could do. So you don't have to close with Pritchard. He's going to have to play a bit. And honestly, like, he shot the ball really well. And played a pretty good first half, hit a big three that put them up 11 in the first half when things were kind of humming. But no, to your point, like, I don't expect, even with Derek White out, for him to be closing another game.
But yeah, I do. He is going to have to play. You're right.
But yeah, I mean, we're kind of burying the lead here a little bit. Jimmy Butler, as you said at the top, was just, he was unbelievable.
It's honestly probably up there with what he was doing in the finals as one of the best two-way performances of his career. I mean, his help defense, his one-on-one defense. I thought Jimmy and Bam in the third quarter, that was what the team imagined. Like, that was the idealized version of this team, putting guys like him, those two, and PJ Tucker together. Just what they're able to do defensively. I mean, Bam off the ball, Bam one-on-one against Jaylen Brown, Jimmy gambling for the steals, Jimmy trying to prevent Jason Tatum from getting into the paint. Like, and then the scoring, he hit that fadeaway over Tatum in the fourth quarter. That kind of turned
shot making was absurd.
Yes, absurd shot making. And listen, if you're a Celtics fan, you live with that Jimmy Butler shot 10 out of 10 times. That's your best defender, a 6'8 guy guarding a smaller guy, great contest. And I've been on this podcast and like we're all serious. Like I've been telling you, I've been skeptical of this Heat team in the half court. Like I don't think they have it. I think Boston's a better team. I think we're on the same page about that, especially when healthy. The one thing that could change it is Jimmy's shot making, and I keep waiting for it to fall off. Because he didn't have that shot in the regular season. Like a lot of these shots he's hitting, they weren't going in the regular season. But he just keeps passing every test, like in the playoffs. And I still am sitting here being like, I don't think he can keep this up, but so far he has.
He only took 2 threes, 18 free throw attempts, which is kind of the story of the game. Mm-hmm. 4 for 6 from the mid-range, 8 for 11 in the paint. A few of those were like pick sixes on consecutive possessions, yeah, or whatever it was in the
some
third quarter.
The third quarter was
like a total massacre. It was like the worst quarter that the Celtics have played basically all season, or since they have kind of established themselves as one of the best teams in the league. So like kudos to Miami for really upping the intensity. Ime Udoka after the game just said, they didn't really change any schemes, like or matchups or anything. It was just like, oh, they're just going to play tough now. And he communicated that to his team at halftime, like beware of the Miami Heat and them upping the physicality. And the Celtics just could not match it. It was a really interesting feel out game. Obviously, Horford's a big part of how the Celtics play on both ends, particularly defensively. And it's tough when. Like Derek White is a really capable ball handler. It looked like, I mean, on one of the lobs that he threw to Rob that Gabe Vincent then stripped the ball, it was like Derek White was wide open at the elbow for a pull up, and he like fake shot past it.
He looked hesitant.
And I was like, Doug, you got to shoot that.
He looked hesitant, and I thought he had moments like that in the Milwaukee series, but he kind of found his place eventually. Like I thought he started slow in that series, and then at least like offensively, pure shot selection wise, like he plays a good floor game. You want him on the floor, so I think he'll find his spots. That was an interesting thing to me too, because he looked hesitant on offensively from pretty much the entire game.
Mm-hmm. And Tatum. Kind of a tale of two halves a little bit. Great in the first half. I tweeted this, but he looked like a guy who's like, oh, there's no Brook Lopez. There's no Giannis Antetokounmpo. Just going to drive to the basket.
But then there was a Jimmy and Bam, you know? We saw all the tweets. Oh, we don't miss Giannis. Oh, it's not the Bucks anymore. Thank God.
Who is we saw the tweets? I'm just curious.
All the people on Heat Twitter just see all the seeing all the thank God we don't have to play the Bucks anymore. Oh, we're playing, you know, we saw it. We saw it, Mike. We did. The DPRB state media was out in full force in the first half. So, you know, we had to launch a counterattack. I'm joking around a lot because I picked the Celtics in six. Like, I think we're on the same page in this series. This is just going to change a lot when Smart is back, because the switches for Miami to attack just won't be there. And I frankly don't. They had like I don't know if it was 115 or 105, but their half court offensive rating was like one of the best they've had all season. Like probably definitely the best in the playoffs. It was over 100. Like, I just don't think that's real. Like, I think that's not them. And I don't see how they do come anywhere close to that again in the series when Smart is playing. It's not that I think Jimmy can't win that matchup sometimes, but he's not going to dominate it like he did Pritchard. And that makes a huge difference.
I don't think you can. I know you can't just like hunt Marcus Smart. That's just like it's just not smart basketball, and that's not it's not something Eric Spoelstra would do at all. It's stagnant. It's
right.
And for as great as Jimmy played, that's just not smart basketball. And Jimmy wouldn't even be.
Yeah,
if you watched,
his.
Honestly, like, the possessions where you hunt Peyton Pritchard, where he was hunting Peyton Pritchard, there was one that has come to the top of my head. I didn't rewatch all those possessions, but on one switch, Pritchard had, like, real solid defense, low center of gravity, and Jimmy rose up from, like, and I'm talking about from my angle, I'm just in my vantage point because I didn't see it on TV, but, like, hit, like, a pretty tough, like, I want to say, like, 18-footer from the top of the key.
It was, like, an elbow jumper, left elbow, just rose above, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's a shot that if you are in a hunt, like, yeah, that's a, you know, he's obviously bigger. He can rise up anytime he wants. That's okay defense. It was more like when they got the switch and the Celtics were trying to avoid it.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, hey, here comes Max Strus on a DHO, and he's wide open. Vincent.
Yep.
Those were the plays where there was like things were breaking down because the Celtics had to get out of their switch everything scheme and things got a little bit more complicated.
And what's interesting to me is throughout the regular season, Jimmy struggled a lot. Like, they had a game against the Mavericks where he was getting Kleber on switches. Now, granted, I think Kleber has since proven to be, like, a pretty good switch defender. That's what makes him so effective. He's, like, capable of using his length, and that's what makes those Mavs lineups good in a lot of scenarios. But it's not like Jimmy's automatic against bigs either. Like, I think if he got Rob on switches, if he got Horford on switches, those are not bad matchups for the Celtics. So I don't think they're going to go hunting for them either. It just is. If playoff Jimmy is a concept, is a real thing, then maybe he can succeed more against those guys than he did during the regular season. But that to me is like every time, like, I'll believe it when I see it.
I think Jimmy, first of all, I want to push back a little bit on, like, the, like, bubble Jimmy. Like, he's just a great player. Like,
thank
I know
you.
I'm guilty. No, but I spent, like, a weekend with Jimmy the summer before he signed with the Timberwolves or was traded to the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, got to see him do a workout at, like, I don't even know, crack of dawn. Got to, like, hang out with him by his pool in Malibu, had some beers. And just, like, talking about his mentality all day long, I just came to adore him. And I've always thought he was one of the 15 at least best players in the world. And, like, now, because of the course that his career has taken where there's a lot of off-court stuff. There's a lot of he's been traded multiple times. He's been perceived as a malcontent, et cetera. We don't have to rehash all of that. But in terms of just pure two-way, complete basketball players, there's just not a lot of guys who are, period, like point blank. Like, I don't understand there's like some sentiment that is still not shock and awe, but like, oh, wow. Is this real?
Like, is this real?
And I'm like, I'm sitting in these post-game press conferences, and I'm like, are you, like, I don't understand. Like, do people watch Jimmy Butler play? Like, have you watched the Miami Heat play this season? Or, like, last season? Or,
yeah.
I don't know. So, I don't mean to, you know.
No, I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't think this Heat team's going to win a title. It would be surprising to me. It would be very surprising. I obviously love it, but
you would really be surprised if they won the title. I'm
not blowing smoke up your ass. Like, I said this on the pod months ago. It's hard to ignore how dominant Boston was. And one thing we've agreed upon was how, like, the season just kind of nosedived in December. And I think we all just kind of threw out the results from that month. And I feel like once the games got really good again, Boston was so far and away the best team. I think Boston and Golden State are like a cut above favorite-wise, for me at least. I'd be a little bit surprised.
Maybe this is a good time to actually like jump into this email we got.
Can I just say one thing real quick before we get into the email?
Sure.
I just want to say I'm happy that Jimmy's having this postseason, because as you mentioned, it was the bubble thing. I think last year you and I are also on the same page, like, there was a lot of weird things about last year that kind of explain what happened in the playoffs. Like guys having COVID and 2 months later playing in the playoffs after having also been through the bubble. Like, I don't hold that series against Jimmy anymore. And I'm just really glad he's having this moment, because like you said, he's been called a lot of things in his career, he has to be accountable to that perception, but I'm just glad he's getting this moment. Like, he, you know, you look at LeBron and D-Wade, some of the runs they had, like, statistically he's been up there with them, and that's really cool to see.
I think this email just is a perfect capper to this conversation. Comes in from Nate from Montreal, who writes,
yo, shout out to Montreal, man. Lovely fucking city.
Nate writes, will you please explain the whistle Jimmy Butler gets? It makes absolutely no sense to me. What sort of dirt does he have on Adam Silver? Is he just funneling free coffee to Zach Zarba and Tony Brothers? Please make it make sense. I could get an NBA contract if all I had to do was snap my neck back and be awarded free throws.
All right, well, I take back everything I said about Montreal.
So I'll just say, like, real quick, Jimmy's ability, I believe this with everybody who draws fouls, from James Harden's prime to Trae Young to anyone, like, drawing fouls is a skill. Getting to the free throw line is a skill. Free throws are the most efficient shot in basketball, assuming you are a good free throw shooter, which Jimmy Butler is. It's tactical. It's smart. There are some plays where, yeah, he'll kick his leg out, whatever. But, like, a majority of them are he forces the issue. His pump fake is absolutely lethal, like DeMar DeRozan-esque. Got a lot of guys in the air on that in game one. 18 free throws is a lot of free throws. But at the same time, like, I didn't see any issue with any of them.
Yeah.
And
I saw some people complaining about the free throws. Believe me. I saw you, Josh Gondelman, complaining about the free throws. Michael Schur complaining about the free throws. Just go back and tell me he's not doing, you know, the rip throughs. He's not doing the let me stick the ball out and let guys hit my hands. Okay. He plays to contact, and that's that. Like, he gets people in the air. He's willing to put his body in those situations. I think in that game, the Heat shot two more free throws than Boston as a team. I think they were even called for more fouls. So I, like, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and
no, this isn't conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I know. Theater. I know. Yeah. So I'm not going to entertain Nate's premise. Let me just say that.
No, I mean, Nate, shout out to you.
Yeah.
Funny email. But, like, to throw cold water on it, Jimmy's great. And, like, it's really not derogatory to be, like, a guy. Like, when we say it's, like, a skill, yeah, there's an art form to selling contact sometimes when you're a shooter, and that's just the NBA. Mm-hmm. Like, great players do it. Jason Tatum, in a lot of ways, needs to learn how to do it a little bit better, because on like, he's starting to do the, like, he brings his arms low.
He brings the arms low, yeah.
And that's like, that's not necessarily a natural basketball movement, but it is natural in the age of I need to get fouled to go to the free throw line.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, what it is. Like, I apologize if people don't like that, but, like, you know, there's other ways to defend. You can show your hands, keep your hands up. You're not going to get every call, but there are, like, just don't foul in a lot of these situations. I'm sorry. But, yeah, so, Nate, that was a funny email. Thank you. I don't think that Jimmy's going to get necessarily 18 a game for the series, but it's been a huge part of his success his entire career. Like, he's DeMar, Harden, Jimmy. Those are the guys who draw fouls and have been excellent at it for, like, the past decade almost. So, yeah, that's who Jimmy Butler is. And he also hit some ridiculous jump shots that have absolutely nothing to do with getting to the free throw line.
Yeah.
So, hats off to him. Do you have anything else? Like, do you want to? I'm trying not to look too forward ahead to game two too much because obviously the shelf life there isn't long. But I guess just real quick, what do you anticipate seeing in game two?
I think it's going to be a much lower scoring game. I don't imagine both teams. I wouldn't be surprised if both teams finish under 100 in this one. I just think the defense is going to be turned up. I think the nerves are going to be turned up. I think Boston's going to come out strong. Smart's going to make a difference. I don't know how the Heat are going to score in the half court. That's what I've been saying against Boston, against good teams this whole time. So that's what I'm most interested to see. Can I plug a story I wrote real quick?
Absolutely.
So I had the pleasure of speaking with Mighty Max Strus this week for a story I wrote about Strus. Shout out to his college coach, by the way, from Lewis University, Scott Trost, who I also spoke with for the story. He was great. But the Heat, remember, I said the concern was 10 out of 10 after that four-game slide they went on in late March. Strus told me in a team meeting, Spo just announced, we're changing the starting lineup. He didn't pull Max aside, nothing like that. Just said team meeting, Max is the starter. They've gone 15-3 since with Strus in the starting lineup. There are two starting lineups this season with Lowry and Vincent. Adebayo, Strus, Tucker, and Butler have been fantastic. He's been great on both ends of the floor, and I don't think he's going to be a guy who shuts down Tatum and Brown. But if he can survive, if he can be somewhere in between what Pritchard was and what someone like Bam is, there's a reason he was closing that game. That's a wide gap. Yes. But it's a,
if my bank account reflected the person who checked me into this hotel and Elon Musk, I'd be in a good spot.
Yeah. But point being, I think it's notable that Strus was closing that game. He hit a couple big threes down the stretch. Hero was on the bench. Strus has been second on the team in plus minus. So all this is in the story. There's some good stuff in there. But he's kind of changed what they can do, because they had a big issue finding, I think, enough two-way players to close a game. And I think he's given them some answers for their closing lineup.
He's great. Really good role player. Derek White's defense on him was, like, out of respect, I felt, in the first quarter, where if you take this guy out, he's their best shooter in the rotation, pretty much. If you, like, make his life miserable and you really trail him well over these screens and, like, contest from behind and bother his shot, then it takes away a key element of Miami's offense in the half court. So, yeah, a lot of respect for Max Strus. He's great, and I think some people are writing stories about him out here because a lot of questions are being asked. And
well, we beat him to the punch, so make sure you check out the SI one first.
We did.
Can I hit you with a trivia question that you'll never get, but I want to throw it out there because it's in my story.
Okay.
This season, Max Strus shot 41% from three on 6.5 attempts per game. There are three players in the NBA who shot as many attempts, so at least 6.5 a game, but shot a better percentage from three. Can you name them?
Desmond Bane is one.
That's correct. I'll give you a hint. The other two are point guards.
Okay. 41%, 6.5 attempts?
Yes.
Point guards. Man, this is tough. This is really not good podcasting.
I know. But I think the listeners are thinking along with us right now.
I don't think so. Steph is not an answer.
Steph is not, because he had his first quote unquote bad shooting season.
So Kennard didn't have enough attempts.
Nope.
I'm trying to think of, like, the three-point leaderboard. Point guards.
Yeah.
Man, this is difficult. My brain has been so locked in the playoffs. Trying to, like, go back to the regular season. Fred Van Fleet.
Fred Van Fleet's not in there. Producer Shelby's threw out Anfernee Simons. Anfernee Simons is not in there. good heat check from Shelby, though. I'll give you the answers.
Okay. Oh, wait. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Shelby said, check again, maybe. The other two players besides Desmond Bane who shot better than Max Strus from three on 6.5 attempts per game, Kyrie Irving and Lonzo Ball.
Wow.
Yeah, Lonzo had a great shooting season.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I wonder how many total attempts Lonzo had because he missed some time. But that's interesting. That's a great stat.
Thank you.
Good job, Rohan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, can we move on? Actually, real quick, I just want to say there's a vibe going around the Celtics right now. I went out to dinner last night with some people who work for the Celtics, etc.
I hope you masked up.
Feeling is that you know, a lot of people think that Jaylen Brown was a little bit disappointing in game one and can play a lot better. So my one prediction is that I think Jaylen Brown will play better in game two. I know I'm going out on a limb there. Okay, great. Let's move on. We have another email. We're going to switch gears and talk about the lottery, but I'm going to kick it off with this email from Thaddeus, longtime
listener. What up, man? It's been a minute, Thaddeus. Hope you're doing well.
Who writes, I should say, it's been a minute. It's been a minute since we've read a Thaddeus email. It's not been a minute since Thaddeus has submitted an email. God bless you, Thaddeus. Thaddeus writes, my wife is a Thunder fan. I may watch more NBA, but she brings a passion I could never touch. I cannot express how much more important her NBA happiness is than mine for us to have fun during the NBA season. Needless to say, I was pumped that the Thunder landed the number 2 pick in the draft. I think both Chet and Jabari are kind of the perfect fit given that SGA and Giddy can handle a lot of the shot creation. I do have a few questions after the results, though. Number 1, what would you do if you're Detroit or Sacramento? Kind of a bummer for them, and I don't think that pick is a game changer given they both just need talent in a lot of ways. They seem like prime targets to load up on picks by trading down. Number 2, what is your most fun player slash team fits in the top few picks? We're going to answer these. Do you want to first zoom out a little bit and kind of just, it seemed like you had takes on the lottery that you wanted to expound upon our listeners. Do you want to do those now, or do you want to keep it hyper-focused, talk about Detroit, talk about Sacramento, talk about, I guess, hypothetical team player?
I guess just what I'm going to say, and I'm very sorry to dump a big bucket of ice water on this whole thing, but like, yeah, I can sit here and tell you that like such and such sheets should take Chet Holmgren, but there's a reason why like every year, like there's some picks that don't work out and some picks that do. Like we're seeing it in the playoffs, like Jaylen Brown, controversial pick, Max Strus, undrafted, Jimmy Butler, end of the first round, etc. Like we can keep going.
Well, 60% of the Heat roster is undrafted.
Right. It's just, I'm draft culture has just gone too far, and we get people who make these like sweeping definitive statements like so-and-so is going to be the steal of the draft, or like this guy is definitely going to matter. And it's like, and then you have someone like Desmond Bane, where I don't know who Desmond Bane is, and I'm watching on draft night and they're like, yeah, this guy was a great shooter in college. And I'm like, then why is he not getting picked? Like, why do we keep picking players who can't shoot? Like number one, it's like, how many players go in the top 10? It's like, this guy will be great once he learns how to shoot. It's like, what's he been doing playing basketball all these years? And then you get like Desmond Bane. It's like, yeah, this guy's like been a great 3-point shooter his whole life. It's like, yeah, draft that guy. So that's how I feel about the draft. And I want everyone to know that that influences all my opinions, where it's like, you know, shout out to our guy, Jeremy Wu, who we know is at the high school games and watching these guys play for years. And really putting in the work to project what these guys can be at the next level. But there's a lot of people who aren't doing that, who give you like all kinds of opinions. And it's like, why? Like, stop.
I agree. I just am someone who, yeah, I don't.
But it's fun. I get it. It's fun to talk about. Listen.
No, it is fun.
And if the Heat and Celtics both had top 5 picks, like we'd be all in. So I totally get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, and when you're a fan of a team that's not good,
yeah, true.
This is what matters.
True.
So
true.
It's important. And I guess we'll talk about it from an NBA perspective real quick before we can kind of wrap in Thaddeus's question into this conversation, but the order of, I'll just say, I guess I could just read the top 10 order. It's Orlando Magic, Oklahoma City Thunder, Houston Rockets, Sacramento Kings, Detroit Pistons, Indiana Pacers, Portland Trail Blazers, New Orleans Pelicans, San Antonio Spurs, and Washington Wizards. Those are the top 10. And then the Knicks have the 11th pick, which they'll obviously screw up. so I guess, like, you know, one of the immediate reactions that the people I watched the lottery with, I watched it in the media dining room with some other writers, was like, okay, pretty much nothing exciting happened. Like the bad
no
teams.
No surprises. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the bad teams got the top picks. The Kings, I believe, are the only team that jumped up. The Pistons moved from, I don't know where they were supposed to be, but they moved down to 5, which is a blow because they were the worst, yeah, one of the worst teams in the league. Yeah. Thunder moved up, which is good. I mean, sure, happy for the Thunder for whatever. I mean, they were kind of a disgrace in blatantly tanking to increase their odds as much as they could.
They kind of put the process Sixers to shame, but they did it quietly, which is what the NBA wants.
Yes. So the Thunder also have the 12th pick, which is really interesting because they got it from the Clippers trade.
Pelicans are in the lottery as well, 8th pick. Thanks to the Lakers.
So I guess we can't really discuss too much about these prospects. We are not just madmen like
draft Knicks. Yeah. By the way, shout out to Jeremy Wu, who we need to bring on the pod.
He'll have his time.
Yeah. Who like always texts me because he's just constantly antagonizing you in our group chat, and he's like, Pina's gotta hate me. Like, Pina thinks I'm a psycho. Like, he also like Jeremy Wu stops liking players once they reach the NBA. He just
is a trend.
You and I will bring someone up like, so and so having a nice season. We'll be like, that guy sucks. It's like, hey man. So shout out to Wu.
Legendary stuff. Yeah. What was your reaction to the Kings moving up to 4? I guess, you know, there are 3 big potential number one type talents in this draft, supposedly, allegedly, no one knows anything. The Kings do move up, like moving up to 4, you know, could be a potential big deal. There's already been some chatter about, will they trade the pick? Will they keep the pick? They have De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, and they want to make the playoffs. They want to be what the Minnesota Timberwolves did this season. They want that to be them. I am skeptical that that is realistic. And maybe when you have a top 5 pick, you should take a top 5 talent and start building around that player. Just, you know, I'm not here to say that I am Jesus Christ and I know all, but first of all,
turn.
Jesus Christ probably wasn't the right.
Is that what he's famous for?
Brutal. Albert Einstein maybe was the person that I was thinking of. Yes. Okay, anyway, so the Kings move up to 4. Just what were your thoughts upon seeing that, and what do you think they do with this pick?
So I did what I always do after the lotteries. I read Wu's mock draft to get a handle of what things are going on. And he has them potentially taking a guard. And I think this all goes back to the Haliburton trade, which we don't need to relitigate fully here, but it's important context because they kept Fox, who probably had worse trade value than Haliburton. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But to me, if they keep Haliburton and don't make the Sabonis trade, I think they're in a better position to draft the best player available, whether that's a guard or someone else, and start kind of building around this new nucleus and look to trade their vets. And I know it's tough. They've been in a perpetual rebuild. Are we going to kind of start the process over? No Kings fan wants to hear that. At the same time, now there's almost a pressure on them to trade the pick because you can't really select another guard. You have Fox and Davion Mitchell. You just got rid of the quote-unquote Haliburton heel logjam. Are you going to go down that route again? But I think the consensus seems to be that this is a 3-player draft. So I'm not really sure. I've seen some chatter that maybe the Pistons might want to trade into that spot. And, you know, maybe there's some, Jeremy Grant. I don't know. But to me, by making the Haliburton trade, they've almost put a pressure on them to
win now.
Yeah. And trade that pick. So it's just, this is how, and it's tough because on one hand, I'm like, NBA teams should not compound on their mismanagement, but I don't know what they do here.
I really hope, if someone like Jaden Ivey, who seems like a really intriguing talent, dynamic guard, like, it's, man, in like another universe, it's like you could build around Jaden Ivey and Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, this team is so exciting. And then in like 3 years, they'll be great. And instead, it's like, okay, we probably aren't going to take Jaden Ivey because we have De'Aaron Fox. So do we take, I don't even know these guys' names, to be honest with you. Like, Keegan Murray is probably the guy who I'm most intrigued by because
Shaden Sharp. Yeah.
I never like the
Kentucky.
Oh, I'm intrigued by this guy who didn't play in college,
yeah.
But he's really explosive. I could be wrong. I know nothing, but
I think that was technically Bam. For what it's worth.
Like,
but
no,
I know
no.
what you mean. I know what you mean.
Bam played. This dude did not play really in college.
I see.
Like the Calipari restriction on Bam's talent. Calipari restricting Devin Booker. There's like a whole like,
sure.
SGA went to, I don't know what the deal was, but he, you know, he's a star now, and I don't think he was doing a lot of that stuff at Kentucky. So it was there, but it was just like a little bit of a different scenario because this dude actually like did not play basketball really at Kentucky. But yeah, so Sacramento's in a really interesting position. I feel bad for Detroit, even though they have Cade Cunningham, who's an absolute gem. I'm sure they can get a really good player at five, but I was thinking about how fascinating it would be if they got a Chet or if they got Jabari. With
yeah,
the first
I mean,
or second
if they're
pick.
Able to, could, what if they package five and Grant? Does that move them up? Does that entice anyone? Can I throw out what's not really draft related, but a draft adjacent scenario at you?
Mm-hmm.
Something we have not gotten to talk about really on the pod, which is unfortunate, was that Suns Mavs game 7, which I attended. And I'm still kind of picking my mind up off the floor from what happened there. And what that means for the future of DeAndre Ayton, which I know you and Herring touched on a little bit, and you seem pretty confident like they got to max him, but do you think there's any of these teams in the lottery that maybe are looking to try to trade Ayton? Can I throw an Ayton trade out at you?
And oh, yeah.
Is it laughed off the table? But is there a way that the Suns, I think the Suns have to add stuff to it, certainly. Do you think the Suns can somehow pry Siakam out of Toronto?
Wow. I was not expecting that.
Because they need a big and they have a little bit of a logjam of forwards. I mean, they paid Anunoby. Scotty's going to need the ball.
We should be clear, like, Siakam is a lot better. Siakam will probably make an All-NBA team.
Agreed. It just they just have such a glaring hole at center as well.
They do. I mean, I just don't think that that's the player that you trade or you dangle in a trade for Ayton if you're Toronto. Like, Toronto was not, like, so far away from making a run in this postseason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, obviously, you know, they had some injuries and...
But I mean, maybe someone like the creativity of Nick Nurse, especially Ayton's still young, you give him a talent like that, you know, his touch, maybe he can put, I think their offense, while maybe they don't have players as accomplished as Booker or Chris Paul, can be a little bit more dynamic at times. And maybe that helps Ayton, but it's just something I thought about last night in the middle of the night, thinking about weird Ayton trades. Because when the lottery came out, I'm like, you know, people have talked about Detroit as a possible landing spot for DeAndre. You know, I just wonder if somehow this mix maybe affects that situation a little bit.
The number five pick for Ayton, and obviously you got to send some stuff out. I think that is probably too steep, especially, I mean, you're a team with cap space, so like, just if you're that interested, give
make
him an offer sheet.
Yeah.
Make Phoenix match it. And honestly, like, Ayton can play a little hardball here. Like, Ayton could be the guy. This is very rare. He could threaten with the qualifying offer if he was that unhappy. And just be like, do not match this, or I will sign my QO. I don't know how the CBA logistics and how the timeline and all the all that goes, but he has some cards to play if he was like super unhappy, which James Jones came out and said that he's a big that Ayton's a big part of what they do, and he is a big part of what they do.
I mean, that was the first time he's gotten a vote of confidence, because Monty avoided giving him one, Devin Booker kind of avoided giving him one. And I can see James Jones saying that to kind of recoup his trade value a little bit, but they're in an interesting position, and I'm curious to see how that plays out.
It should be very, very interesting. It's one of the biggest storylines going into the offseason for sure. Okay, so we should probably touch on – did you have any more lottery thoughts?
Oklahoma City getting up to two is interesting. Wu mocked Chet Holmgren going there. Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated by Oklahoma City, because at what point do they start trying to win? Getting the number two pick in this draft, I mean
– now. Now you start trying
to win. You have SGA. I thought I'd watched such little college basketball this year. I've never seen Chet Holmgren play. So those are my draft takes. Having said that, I liked Banchero at Duke when I watched him play. He looked like he had an NBA-ready body. He like reminded me a little bit of Jonathan Kuminga in that regard. Like he looks like he's ready to belong on an NBA court already. That's interesting. And I know that he was such a big name coming into this year. It's interesting to me that Wu had a mock three. I wonder how that's going to shake out, because I think the Thunder got to start putting some – SGA is so good. Like, they got to start trying, man.
They're in a really interesting spot. I mean, it's. I think it's good for the league, honestly, that they got a number two pick. Because I mean, I'm sick of watching Thunder games on League Pass.
Oh, my God, dude.
I'm just like
I had to watch a Thunder game in person, and they won without – and it was terrible.
That was against the Nuggets, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was awful.
Embiid would never.
Yeah,
I just got to get that on the record.
Embiid would never. Yeah, yeah. Did you see the story that the mayor decreed Embiid most valuable Philadelphian?
We literally cannot even start talking about this, or like John Gonzalez is going to burst through my hotel room door with an axe.
I hope that the mayor decrees their fans like the most on-time fans next. Like, just keep going with the fake awards that mean nothing to make you feel better about yet another second round exit, even though you tanked all those years to allegedly do better than that.
Shout out Thad Young. Shout out Drew Holiday.
Michael Carter Williams.
Evan Turner.
Yeah.
Shout them all out.
Broke.
Okay. So
one last thing, tying it all together. I don't think the Thunder have anyone of interest outside of SGA, but can they somehow get in the mix for some kind of three teamer that somehow involves them keeping the number two pick while also getting DeAndre Ayton? Is that some? Is it? They have the 12th pick again, you said. I mean, they have all those future picks.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something they can do to kind of get Ayton on the team while also keeping the number two pick? Then you take Banchero, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we have three really exciting talents here.
I don't know, like, if that's necessarily the smartest play, just because, by some accounts, Chet is a better prospect than Ayton was.
Mm-hmm.
And so you usually don't trade a guy who's about to enter a rookie scale deal for a guy who's about to get a max contract who plays the same position. So that's probably unlikely. But they aren't like, I don't know. I wouldn't say that they are is a 0% chance that they're in the market for Ayton, depending on what they feel about Chet, what they feel about Paolo, what they feel about Ivy. I mean, they're a very – no one really knows how they think. And so which is – or maybe Jabari drops. Maybe the Magic take Chet. We can't really make any assumptions at this point. So
I mean, the Magic,
it'll be fascinating.
The Magic love taking a center when they already have six centers on the roster. That's kind of what they've been doing for a while. So it wouldn't shock me.
I feel like I'm the only person who's intrigued by the Orlando Magic.
I mean, if Jonathan Isaac exists outside of Fox News, then maybe
Doug.
If he
If Jonathan Isaac wants to come on this pod instead of the Megyn Kelly show, like he's invited, that's great. I would
we'd love to talk about
basketball.
Hoops. Yeah, man. We'd love to talk about hoops and how good you are at defense. Agreed.
Great.
No, I mean, they had their lineup, like with Cole, Wagner, like they were like kicking ass this year for a little while.
Wendell Carter had a good year.
Yeah. So I'm not out on them. They just like, there was like 6 years where they had like eight centers on the roster at all times. So I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
But you know, I could, okay. Last thing about the Magic and then we'll switch gears. But the way I've kind of viewed basketball's next stage of evolution is like small ball is skill ball. And then all of a sudden it's just like a team that's able to have guys who are 6'10", but play like guards, mm-hmm. who can shoot, put it on the deck, defend. And I'm like, okay, so you have Wagner is like that type of player that's in my mind. That's mm-hmm. like a very skilled big who can just, he's positionless in a lot of ways. And if you get Jabari, okay, that's another 6'10" guy who can shoot and handle, and he's a versatile defender. And all of a sudden you're like kind of putting together these pieces that just are.
So you think that you think the Magic are collecting Infinity Stones right now?
I think that we should be. It could potentially get pretty scary. That's okay, all I'm gonna say. Okay. And all of us, I'll just say this also about Orlando, like low key, quiet, semi sleeping giant in terms of free agent destination.
Yes, agreed.
I will say
agreed.
That too.
Agreed.
No taxes, good weather. That's pretty much the key to an NBA star's heart.
Yeah.
If they're good. So I just want to also mention that. There could be, we could be at the ground floor of something interesting. I just want to put that out there. Let's switch gears.
Kyrie to the Magic next year.
It's a great way to show progress as an organization.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears. Let's touch briefly upon the Western Conference Finals. We're not going to put too much stock into this just because game one was a blowout. I feel like there's not too much to take away, but
can I throw out a take on workshopping? Are the Mavericks getting a little overrated?
You think so?
So hear me out. All the games they lost against Phoenix was a blowout. Were blowouts, right?
Mm-hmm.
The game seven game did happen. Yes. But if they played that game seven 100 times, I think the result that actually happens only once or twice.
I agree with that. That was one of the most unbelievable games.
Yeah, and I think people
in like 25 years.
And people are just running with it so far, like, and obviously you have to steal Monty Williams coachism, which I think he picked up from the Pop. You have to have an appropriate fear with Luka Doncic. And that appropriate fear is high. But people are acting like the Suns couldn't beat this guy when in fact they beat him multiple times with him going off, with him having bad shooting nights, etc. And yeah, I just wonder if some of the Mavericks conversation has gotten a little bit out of hand.
Breaking news, Celtics center Al Horford will play in game two tonight. Just have to say that.
Fascinating. What happened there? What a weird situation.
I literally think that me speculating, he was just like in a room taking COVID tests every 15 minutes until he tested negative. Yeah. I have no idea what that situation, but he is playing. So we're just going to get that on the record there.
That's cool.
Back to the Western Conference Finals. I'll say game one, it was a blowout. Strange game. A lot of adjustments can still be made on both ends, especially I feel like Dallas's ability to attack Curry and Poole, and like they just weren't like the Warriors defense against it was like hedge and recover, and it's like, okay, well, you're just gonna let them hedge and recover and have no way to punish it over and over again. Thought that was interesting. Thought that the Golden State Warriors made a lot of mid-range jump shots. We'll see if those fall throughout this. I mean, there's just a lot of, it's a game one, feel out game. I hear what you're saying to your point about maybe the Mavs are overrated. I picked the Mavs in six. I do not think that Luka in any way, shape, or form is overrated. I think he is the real deal. I think that if you were looking for...
I don't think he's overrated, but I think he people act like he's more unbeatable than he is.
I think when certain things are happening, he is unbeatable.
Yes.
I think when Maxi Kleber shoots 45% from behind the three-point line, he is unbeatable.
He's unbeatable, correct.
And the three they missed in the first quarter alone, I don't even know how many wide-open threes the Dallas Mavericks missed. And they seem to shoot better as a team at home, too. So I think this is going to be a long series, fun series. What was your pick for this?
I picked the Warriors in six.
Very valid pick.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be one of those. Maybe it'll go seven. Who knows? Yeah. If it goes seven, I'm going with Luka all day, every day. Yeah, I think that'll do it for today's show, Rohan. Good luck to you tonight. You're in my thoughts. Just kidding. You're not. No. You're definitely not in my thoughts.
As I said at the top of the pod, people think we're friends in real life. It's not true. As soon as the mics go off, this rapport goes away immediately.
I do have something in my contract where you have to reach out to a middleman if you want to contact me off the air.
Exactly.
So that the people know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I'm interested to see what the Heat do with Smart and Horford back in the line. This should be a much more accurate representation of the battleground this series will be fought on. So this should be a good game.
It's fun. Thank you so much, Rohan, for your expertise and your insight. Thank you so much to our listeners. Please keep your emails coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody please continue to enjoy the NBA playoffs.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.